Good morning. My name is Kirk Ridgway. I'm your worship leader for today. Ann Hillman is today's worship associate and also will be leading us in the singing. Accompanying us is Melanie Beats. I messed it up, right? helping to make this service happen are a whole host of volunteers, and we are very pleased that they are here with us each week to make this ongoing effort. Ann and I welcome you as we gather to explore and affirm what it is to be human in our relationships with each other and in the world we live in. In this place, we acknowledge and respect the diversity of spiritual pathways and the multiplicity of personhoods that make up our dynamic and ever-changing world. We embrace all who come here that seek equal, compassionate, and loving connection.
We extend a warm welcome to first-time and returning visitors. We hope that you will find the people of this community supportive, challenging, and encouraging as you evolve in your social and spiritual journey. If this is your first time here, please stop by the welcoming desk in the social hall so we can offer you more information. About who we are and answer any questions you may have. If you come here today with a particular joy or sorrow, we invite you to write that joy or sorrow on a page of the milestone book in the back of the sanctuary. If you choose, you may light a chalice candle marking your milestone. Please indicate if you would like to receive a pastoral call.
As you settle into today's service, may you remember that in this place you are accepted just as you are. At the same time, may you be open to changes that will enhance your life and those around you. Perhaps it will be a subtle change in consciousness, awareness, a willingness to take a small step forward in a new direction, or seeing the unseen. Now is the time to center through music.
Lighting our candles and chalice today is Gail Jankowski, chair of our grounds committee. She would like some volunteers to help eradicate star thistle, which are coming back on our church grounds. Before we light the flame of our chalice that is the symbol of our UU faith, we begin with lighting two pillar candles, one candle for shining a light on the joys that arise in our life, and one candle for shining a light on the sorrows inevitable in everyone's life. Now we will light the chalice. We light this chalice with this excerpt from Rumi's poem, Deliberation, translated by Coleman Barks. Constant slow movement teaches us to keep working, like a small creek that stays clear, that doesn't stagnate, but finds a way through numerous details deliberately. And I'll say it again. Constant slow movement teaches us to keep working like a small creek that stays clear, that doesn't stagnate, but finds a way through numerous details deliberately.
Now the question. Who here loves chocolate chip cookies? Raise your hands. Okay, all right. I don't have any for you. Sorry. When I was a child, my mother, the week before Christmas, used to make dozens and dozens of chocolate chip cookies piled high throughout the kitchen. The aroma filled the house. Of course, we as kids would like to have a few, and oftentimes we snuck more than we were supposed to until she chased us out of the kitchen. We were supposed to wait till Christmas to eat these. So after she cooked them and we kept on eating them, what did she do with them? Well, she hid those cookies in boxes all over the house so we couldn't find them, eat them, and make ourselves sick before Christmas. If she left them out, we certainly would have. How did she know how to hide them? How did she know to do this? She must have read that great self-help book, Frog and Toad. So I will be Frog, and Anne will be Toad.
Toad baked some cookies. "These cookies smell very good," said Toad. He ate one. "And they taste even better," he said. Toad ran to Frog's house. "Frog, Frog," cried Toad, "taste these cookies that I have made."
Frog ate one of the cookies. "These are the best cookies I have ever eaten," said Frog. Frog and Toad ate many cookies, one after another. "You know, Toad," said Frog, with his mouth full, "I think we should stop eating. We will soon be sick."
"You are right," said Toad. "Let us eat one last cookie, and then we will stop."
Frog and Toad ate one last cookie. There were many cookies left in the bowl.
"Frog," said Toad, "let us eat one very last cookie, and then we will stop."
Frog and Toad ate one very last cookie.
"We must stop eating," cried Toad as he ate another.
"Yes," said Frog, reaching for a cookie. "We need willpower."
"What is willpower?" asked Toad.
"Willpower is trying hard not to do something that you really want to do," said Frog.
"You mean like trying not to eat all of these cookies?" asked Toad.
"Right," said Frog. Frog put the cookies in a box. "There," he said, "now we will not eat any more cookies."
"But we could open the box," said Toad.
"That is true," said Frog. Frog tied some string around the box. "There," he said, "now we will not eat any more cookies."
"But we can cut the string and open the box," said Toad.
That is true, said Frog. Frog got a ladder. He put the box up on a high shelf. "There," said Frog, "now we will not eat any more cookies."
"But we can climb a ladder and take the box down from the shelf and cut the string and open the box," said Toad.
That is true, said Frog. Frog climbed the ladder and took the box down from the shelf. He cut the string and opened the box. Frog took the box outside. He shouted in a loud voice, "Hey, birds, here are cookies." Birds came from everywhere. They picked up all the cookies in their beaks and flew away.
"Now we have no more cookies to eat," said Toad sadly. "Not even one."
"Yes," said Frog, "but we have lots and lots of willpower."
"You keep all the willpower, Frog," said Toad. "I am going home now to bake a cake." Now we'll sing the children out with the children's blessing. I wanted to tell you that this is my last service as worship associate. 2 years ago, bedstraw, a noxious weed, was all over our church grounds. I was concerned not only for our grounds, since bedstraw seeds travel on birds, squirrels, bunnies, pets, and people, we could contaminate the whole neighborhood. Gail Jankowski, who lighted the chalice, suggested that I start on the parking lot. I aimed to weed around all the logs, but the goal kept expanding. I weeded 5 feet back from the logs, so traveling seeds would not undo my work. The center divide could also reseed the places I had worked, so I tackled that. The weeds were in the pines between the two churches where people walk their dogs, spreading seeds. There were large patches under every tree on our campus. Bedstraw was climbing the red buds 3 feet high in a thick mat. After a couple months of weekly weeding, I started weeding every day. I called the use of my time my daily exercise, but I couldn't keep ahead of it, and blossoms were out. I had to finish before the plants set seed. I emailed the guardians of the grounds and got 4 people to help one day, and my wonderful husband helped me clear the red buds. Working from January to March, I cleared most of the plants from our grounds. The next year, they were back in the same places. I had expected this and forged on, as in the previous year, to eliminate the seed bank. This year they were back again, but I only weeded the logs. I had decided that it was unbalanced to spend so much of my time on church weeding, But did I tell anyone so someone else could take it up? No. Asking for help and coordinating people makes me uncomfortable. Giving up, I watch the plant set seed. Each seed will make 400 seeds. I see evidence that someone else is weeding. Thank you, that someone. My 2 years of work were for nothing because I allowed shyness to stop me from asking for help. Writing this essay has revealed to me that this was a failure of willpower. Almost everyone has a personality characteristic which impedes them over and over from reaching their goals. Mine is shyness and preferring to work alone. Yours might be something else, procrastination, rationalization, passing the buck. There are hundreds. It takes willpower to overcome our weaknesses in determination to reach our goals. I'm 64 and I can still learn, right? My nurturing church community, I'm asking for your help. Would you join the bed straw eradication team and Gail's star thistle eradication team? 7 people weeding weekly for 1 month would equal 1 person weeding daily. If any of you can help, I'd love to talk to you.
This reading is an excerpt from the autobiographical novel, A Fort of Nine Towers, an Afghan family story. Written from a young boy's point of view, it is a story of a family fleeing town to town as they tried to escape from war-torn Afghanistan, a country they loved. It is about their ironclad resolve and disappointing setbacks. One day, my father was talking to my grandfather about some man in Haritan, a town that was on the border with the Soviet Union, which we always just called Russia, about an hour's drive from Mazar-i-Sharif. I listened and though I did not understand what he was talking about at first, slowly, however, I understood that all those days in Mazar, when he had left the house so early and had come back home so tired, he had been going back and forth to Haritan, trying to arrange to have our family smuggled across the border. Suddenly, I felt stupid for having been so unhappy with my father in those days. I had not known what he was trying to do. He had been doing the same thing when we were in Kunduz. He had gone north to the border many times, but had never been successful. Being smuggled is expensive. We had enough money when fighting had first started, but as time passed, we had to use most of it just to live on. Now, there was very little left. I looked at my father as he was telling these things to his father, and I felt a kind of respect for him in a way I had never had before. I had blamed him for not having enough money to get us out of the country, for not taking us someplace where nobody could tell us what to do or how to be. Many times I had wanted to ask him why all his friends were living in America or Europe, but we were still in Afghanistan. I had never dared to say that. But I had been resentful. Now I felt ashamed. I understood, as I never had before, what a tough man my father was. I thought of how he had carried us from one place to another to save our lives, like a cat carrying its kittens in its mouth. Out of the night that covers me, black as a pit from pole to pole, I thank whatever gods might be for my unconquerable soul. the fell clutch of circumstance, I have not winced nor cried out loud. Under the bludgeonings of chance, my head is bloodied but unbowed. Beyond this place of wrath and tears lies but the horror of the shade, and yet the menace of the years finds and shall find me unafraid. It matters not how straight the gate, how charged with punishment the scroll. I am the master of my fate. I am the captain of my soul. 26-year-old Victorian poet William Ernest Henley wrote this poem, Invictus, in 1875, as he was recovering in the hospital from a lower leg amputation due to crippling tubercular arthritis. The poem emphasizes fearlessness and might in the face of adversity. It is a bold statement in praise of strong will. It is a well-known poem, especially the fearless proclamation of the last two lines, I am the master of my fate. I am the captain of my soul. It has been widely used by respected world leaders like Nelson Mandela to help him through 27 years of imprisonment, and by FDR as he struggled with crippling polio. The power of the poem to evoke strong will has also been used by nefarious individuals such as Timothy McVeigh, the 1995 Oklahoma City bomber who killed 168 innocent people. Many people, and probably some in this room, have used this poem as an affirmation that they could rise above challenges and adversities. But what is this thing called willpower, this mental capacity that gives us psychic energy? Is there something greater about willpower than simply the power to dominate, or the Victorian concept of willpower as a repressive restraint? Is there a more constructive and affirming, creative understanding of willpower? For a more complete understanding of willpower, we could turn to the work of the Italian psychiatrist Robert Acciaioli. Acciaioli was a pioneer in humanistic and transpersonal psychology. He stated that fully developed willpower encompasses the attributes of strong will, skillful will, good will, and spiritual will. Strong will is the mental power of persistence and perseverance to accomplish something. It is the ability to struggle and to persist in the face of challenges, especially those that require delayed gratification or have no guarantee of success at all. Strong will is sometimes instantaneous, like running into a burning building to save a child. Other times, strong will is a steady flow of energy, as when we apply ourselves steadfastly to our careers to earn money to raise our family, or fighting racism. At other times, willpower is simply doing what needs to be done, like going to work each day, limiting how many chocolate chip cookies we eat, or even the task of pulling bed straw weeds. Strong will is most evident in the face of adversity when we carry on with focused determination, courage, and patience. Rooted in tenacity of spirit, is holding fast to a vision of a better future. To lack strong will is to be apathetic, passively carried away by circumstances like a cork adrift in the ocean. Often strong will arises from family and community, from the relationships that allow us to lean on each other for support when we need it. The Afghan father in the reading today demonstrated strong will in his relentless pursuit of safety for his family. Along the way, his indomitable spirit, his strong will was supported, kept alive by the love of his family and the help of many strangers. That we require a strong will to live a vital and wholehearted life is self-evident. However, the other attributes of willpower need to be developed and applied. Skillful will is needed. I could back my car out of the garage by pushing it out, or I could get into the car, turn on the engine, and back it out. In negotiations, I could try to overpower the opposition, or I could use wise negotiation skills to come up with a mutually viable outcome. I could learn to pace myself rather than exhaust myself with relentless pursuits. Certainly, many great exemplars, such as Gandhi, King, and Mandela, were masters of strong will. Yet they were equally adept at applying skillful will. simply stated, skillful will is the application, the wise application of knowledge and experience. It is recognizing obstacles to where we want to go and then maneuvering with patience and fortitude to make our way forward. Skillful will allows us to choose those actions most consistent with our inner attributes and values. This choosing, what we call free will, is a central feature of our human condition. Lacking skillful will, we are once again like a cork floating on the ocean. On the other hand, like a helmsman steering a ship, skillful will that arises from mature wisdom can steer us towards harmony with the elements of our life, both within ourselves and within our external relationships. Of course, there are times in our life when the going gets tough and where we have no choice but to depend on strong will to get us through. Yet often it is a wise and courageous act to acknowledge that this isn't working and change course using skillful will rather than pushing on with only strong will. In the story of the Afghan father, as he tried to get his family across the border and out of harm's way in war-torn Afghanistan, he kept running into obstacles to each one of his plans to escape. Each time, he had to discard one plan and take a completely different track. This is strong will and skillful will working in harmony. How do we define good? Isn't goodness a function of perspective? What is good for me could be bad for you. What is good in our culture or this culture may be bad in another. Is there a universal definition for what is good that can cross all individual and cultural divides? Thinking about this, I return to the philosophical and spiritual studies of the good, the beautiful, and the true, concepts that date back into antiquity, finding its first expressions in the Bhagavad Gita and the teachings of Plato. In a new church history, the inquiry and understanding of the good, the beautiful, and the true are part of our Christian and transcendental heritage. The good commonly refers to ethics and morals. The beautiful to art and aesthetics. The true to science and nature. What is good are the right goals and right actions in each of these categories that embodies and unites the most noble, most inclusive, universal virtues and ideals of mankind. Thus, goodwill is characterized by qualities like universal compassion, universal kindness, selflessness, and service to others to achieve harmonious outcomes for the well-being of all sentient beings. The common ground of every noble tradition carries guidance on how this might be done. The Ten Commandments of Christianity, the Eightfold Path of Buddhism, the Humanist Manifesto of Humanism, the Five Pillars of Islam, the principles and purposes of Unitarian Universalism. To grasp and understand and appreciate what these ideals encompass, we only need to look toward noble exemplars in our life and the history of the world. Strong will, skillful will, and goodwill must be developed in a balanced fashion to give us full access to the power of a unified will. It requires us to learn to choose the right goals and right actions. By doing so, we refrain from the seductive pull of adverse desires and destructive impulses. Goodwill is the antidote to the wrong and evil use of untethered, strong, or skillful will. One caveat. We can still do things that are insensitive or harmful, even when we make our best attempt to apply goodwill. Though we have the best of intentions, we can actually do harm. Like the kindly monkey who, seeing a fish in the water, rushes to rescue it from drowning by carrying it up into the branches of a tree. We need humility in the actions we take. The Afghan father, in seeking escape, was constantly challenged in applying goodwill. When he forced his son to steal food from an orchard because his family was weak and starving, he struggled with the violation of his noblest ideals and he weighed the wrongs against the physical realities for survival and of his family. We all face hard choices where our goodness is challenged. Marie Howe, in her poem Annunciation, wrote, "Even if I don't see it again, nor ever feel it, I know it is, and that if once it hailed me, it ever does. Even if I don't feel it again, nor ever feel it, I know it is, and that if once it hailed me, it ever does." These lines point to the personal and intimate experience of revelation of a vast new interior space, a super consciousness of positive values that affirms life and encourage us to be that life. An experience of becoming acutely aware of our deeper, hidden, more noble aspirations and potentialities. The expansion of the consciousness is a seedbed of the spiritual and transpersonal realms of our existence. There are so many ways this occurs, always intensely personal. Sometimes a spontaneous illumination, a calling. Other times, more slowly, subtly, over time. There are hundreds of names for the field of consciousness. God, Allah, Yahweh, the Tao, non-dual oneness, pure consciousness. Whatever our belief system or the words we use, this is where our higher consciousness truly becomes alive and embodied in our daily lives. Kindness, love, compassion, our noblest virtues, become the true north of our interior world and outward behaviors. With the evolution of spiritual consciousness, strong will, skillful will, good will, spiritual will becomes a unified field of benevolent will for energy to better guide us through our life. There's one more important factor for creation of this benevolent field of willful energy, the union of love and willpower. Acciaiuoli believed there are two main drives, love and will. He states that a healthy human being balances these two drives. The love drive reveals and directs our awareness towards relationships and experiences of nurturing and caring. The willpower drive serves the love drive as the engine to propel us forward into those harmonious interpersonal and social relationships. Without love, we merely circle around our own eccentric self, driven by impulsive, untethered will. Rollo May, an existential psychologist, said, "Man's task is to unite love and will. They are not united by biological growth, but must be part of conscious development. The cultivation of human love is truly an art." I believe this is the primary role of the teachings and relationships taught here and experienced at UUCD, the conscious development of human love. Indeed, in all the noblest manifestations of the world's great religion, love is the central teaching. I return again to the Afghan father in his travails, especially when he failed again and again to get his family to safety. It was a combination of love for his family and a unified will that sustained him to carry on. And this love and will was sustained by a strong cultural and spiritual tradition, in his case, Islam. Mature, unified, fully developed willpower, embracing the good, beautiful, and true, motivated by love, is how humanity can achieve its greatest potential. And every individual has the capacity to develop their willpower through conscious awakening. That is what we strive to achieve in our gatherings here. We can, to a great extent, become the master of our fate, the captain of our soul.
Out of the night that covers me, I'm unafraid, I believe, beyond this place of wrath and tears beyond the hours that turn to years. I thank whatever gods may be.
1 year ago, my wife and I were introduced to a refugee Afghan family of 8 who arrived in the United States with only the clothes in their back and their suitcase. The oldest of the 6 children was 19, the youngest 9 months. The father sadly spoke English. A few of the kids knew some English phrases. They left Afghanistan because Sally had worked for the American military as a civil engineer for 16 years. He was being threatened with death by the Taliban. They left behind their house, their bank accounts, their culture, and most importantly, their family and friends. They knew they may never return home or see their family again. Since knowing them, they have visited our home and we have visited theirs. They made graham cracker gingerbread houses at our home during Christmas. We celebrated the end of Ramadan in their small 2-bedroom apartment. Given what they have been through and their current stresses of being in a strange new country, they are amazing to watch as they exude tremendous respect, care, and love for each other. They laugh a lot. During these visits, we have learned so much about Afghanistan and its people through their gracious hospitality. We are grateful for having them come into our lives. As I prepared for the service, I thought about people I have known personally who are exemplars of the unification of willpower and love. I thought of the many people who displayed strong will, skillful will, and goodwill. I could think only of a few, as I could perceive, that were also profoundly and consciously guided by spiritual will. In my reflections, I thought about the father I read about in the book from which the early reading was taken. I thought about how Sally's story paralleled that father's story. I thought about how willpower and love was very much alive in Sally's life. After one conversation with him about Islam, I came away with a greater understanding and appreciation of how his faith tradition informed his daily life. I realized that he was truly the common man's exemplar of strong, skillful, good, and spiritual will. The immensity of my respect and admiration for this man is unbounded. And yes, my love for this man and his family is great and an unexpected gift. Now I'd like you to sit back, relax, breathe easily, rest or close your eyes, go inward. This reflective exercise will be brief due to time. I hope that when you go home, you will spend more time with what I will ask of you. Now take 3 sleep, 3 deep, slow breaths. Let your hands relax in your lap. Think of a person you have personally known and admired. A noble exemplar in your life. In your mind's eye, focus on that one person. Hold that person in your thoughts. Now think about how that person has displayed strong will. Consider how that person has applied skillful will. In what way has that person exhibited goodwill? How has that person revealed spiritual will? How have you experienced that person's love? Now think of yourself. How have you manifested each of the four wills of willpower? How do you express love? Return into this room from our internal reflections. We carry forward our thoughts and feelings about the person we contemplated, and perhaps we discover something about ourselves worthy to further explore. And continuing prayerfully, as we go forward, may the good, beautiful, and true permeate our lives as we encounter the triumphs and misfortunes of life. May compassionate and humane solutions be put into action that meet the horrendous circumstances of migrants in detention centers at our southern borders. May civil dialogue once again rise above the hateful partisan rhetoric that presently consumes our country. May noble and unified strong will, skillful, good, and spiritual will be the willpower energy that propels those much-needed conversations. And now, may harmonious love and willpower be our spiritual path as we remember that each of us is a part of the intricate web of relationships. When one of us celebrates a joy or grieves a loss, the web of life moves to a new shape. We are part of the return of the earth, the shift of the stars, the pull of the sea, and all change. May it be so. As we come to the end of the service, we extinguish the pillar candles symbolizing our sorrow. May these sorrows be lightened. And we extinguish the pillar candle of our joys. May those joys spread and grow. And we extinguish the flame of the chalice. May we bring brightness, compassion, and joy to this world. If people will please join hands for our closing. Lao Tzu, the 6th century sage, said, "Some say my teaching is nonsense. Others call it lofty but impractical. But to those who have looked inside themselves, this nonsense makes perfect sense. And to those who put it into practice, this loftiness has roots that go deep." May the teachings offered today have roots that go deep. And to that we say, Amen. Amen.